Okay, man, so we're live. So welcome, everyone, to the first episode of Grumpy Guys BJJ Podcast. I am James Wilson. I'm here with my buddy Rob Eichhoff. What's up, Rob?
Yo.
So today, being our first episode, we want to go over a couple things. First, we want to go over, you know, what is Grumpy Guy BJJ? You know, who are we? And then we want to get into something that Rob and I both got a lot out of, which is a Steve Maxwell seminar that we went to in Arizona. So we drove across the desert, had a little bit of a vision quest along the way. And in some ways, like, that was the birth of Grumpy Guys BJJ Podcast, because we talked about a lot of shit and realized we still had a lot of shit to talk about. So so we want to talk about the Steve Maxwell seminar and what we took away from that and some of the stuff that we've been talking to people here at the gym about, and hopefully will help you with your training and help you get more out of your jiu-jitsu and stuff. So so first off, what is Grumpy Guy BJJ? Rob, what's your take on it?
First off, did you introduce yourself? You say you're James Wilson, strength coach, all that good shit.
Yeah.
Well, I better introduce myself then. Rob Eichhoff. I'm not going to get into my whole bio. I've been doing jiu-jitsu since 2003, 2004. I always kind of lose track, somewhere in that ballpark. And just got my black belt back in February, and now here we are.
Here we are, yeah.
We'll evolve from there.
Yeah.
I'll divulge all my important other details as the time comes up.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll share too much on this podcast.
I know, man.
Shit's going to get me in trouble, man.
I've already had to make conscious effort. Like, we can't mention people by name. We got to come up with nicknames for people.
Oh, hey, I see there's an edit button on this thing, so if we get too crazy,
we can always
fix it.
So, but yeah, so. I good time for introduction for myself, too. I didn't cover that. But, yeah, I'm a strength coach by trade. My name's James Wilson. I'm a mountain biker originally, and I got into BJJ about 5 years ago, and got my purple belt a little over a year ago, and just I love it. I knew things changed for me the night that I stopped dreaming about jumping on my mountain bike and started dreaming about choking people out. So anyways, I'm sure if you're listening to this, you know how that addiction goes. But the idea of Grumpy Guy BJJ, it's funny, it was a nickname we actually gave to originally to Rob and his yoga class.
Rob started my yoga class.
Remember, Kielin came up with a name. My wife came up with a name because you were doing some stretches. You would do some. You'd have stretches you'd go through after training, and eventually you had a couple people who were doing it with you, and so you had like a little group that you're leading through.
A little following.
You still do, man. He still got his little crew, but I was laughing at him one day, as I like to do, and I was like, man, you got your own little yoga class there. And my wife came up with it. She's like, yeah, we'll call it Grumpy Guy Yoga. And so the name stuck because it's kind of funny, man. It's like a funny moniker because, like, people that know us, especially, you know, people that know you, like, you're not grumpy, right? Like, you just take what you do seriously, and you have a hard time tolerating people that don't. And so, you know, like, I don't really...
I can be grumpy.
No, but I can be... But I don't mean, like, you're grumpy as in, like...
All
like
the time.
Grumpy is your default mood, you know what I mean? Like, you're not just walking around like just grumpy all the time. Like, you get grumpy because you walk around and you see a lot of shit that, you know, people could be doing better.
Yeah.
People could be trying better. You know, people could be applying themselves better. And so, like, that can come across as being grumpy to a lot of people who don't necessarily understand, like, that mindset, you know? And so, because I get the same thing. Like, people call me grumpy, and it's, again, like, if you know me, like, I'm not grumpy. But I do just, I'm like, man, if you're going to do it. So, like, I was thinking about this. I told you on the way here, I was thinking about it. Like, to me, man, it just kind of represents, like, a work ethic, you know? Like, if you're going to do it right, you know? Like, show up, put in the work, don't complain. And, you know, and it's just kind of not being able to really fully understand people that don't get that. And, like, they come, you know, comes across as being grumpy. But I just take it as being serious about your craft.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think it's just a lack of patience for... laziness. Like, if you're gonna do something, why do it half-ass? You know what I mean? Like, why bother doing it at all?
Yeah.
And so I can totally see that comes across as grumpy. But you know what's funny about that is I didn't know Kielly came up with the name, but so the name Grumpy, my grandpa, all growing up, now he was legitimately grumpy. Like, dude, he was just a grumpy old man. Like, your stereotypical, yelling at the neighbor kids for being on his lawn, you know, just grumpy all the time. And that was his nickname. Like, yeah, that's all we call it. That was Grumpy Grandpa, man. And, like, dude, the neighbors even knew him as Grumpy. Like, a lot of people just called him Grumpy. That was his nickname.
That's funny.
And I'll get that, you know, especially as I'm getting old, a little bit older, I'll get some random family members would be like, man, you're turning into grandpa, you know. I'll find myself doing shit. And so the fact that she came up with the name Grumpy, and like, I really got, I mean, I love my grandpa to death. We got along great. And the fact that I'm kind of turning into him, and then all of a sudden she slaps the name Grumpy on there. I was like, dude, that's too perfect, man. That's like, it was like it was meant to be, you know.
That is funny, man. Yeah, it's, yeah, yeah. So anyway, so that's kind of the idea, man, I think, behind. Then I was joking around, like the tagline for Grumpy Guy BJJ is, this is your father's BJJ, nice. Right? Like, because it's like, dude, you know, if you think about your dad, at least my dad, it's like, man, that was how he was, man. He took his shit seriously. And if you're fucking off, like, he got grumpy. And, you know, grumpy might include a belt. But, you know, it was like, you know, just do what you're supposed to do, and the reward will be there in the end. I think that's kind of like the message with jiu-jitsu, period, man. I was talking with someone the other day, and it's like, man, like, jiu-jitsu especially embodies that, man, if you just keep showing up, like, you can't help but get better, right? Like, if you just keep putting in the work and you have the patience, like, you'll get better. Like, obviously, there's ways to fast-track that more than others, but, man, you know, you can't replace the time and the patience that it takes to do it. And if you keep showing up, man, then good things will happen. But so I think that's kind of the idea behind it. Not like go out there and be a grumpy asshole, but
only when it calls for it.
Only when it calls for it, man. Exactly. You know, you're not throwing knees in people's eye sockets all the time.
All the time. Only
every once in a while.
A little elbow grinding in the rib cage.
Yeah.
A little
exactly.
Knee on the face to simmer someone down.
Yeah, imagine, what's that guy, Wagner?
Wagner Rocha.
Yeah, see, I imagine him being like, you know, he's like, you know, I'd say he's probably in a grumpy guy BJJ category. Like,
you watch him in that last EBI, man. He was going for that Kimura, and he was putting his shin right on that dude's head. And I was like, dude, that's perfect, man.
Oh, man.
And they were the commentators were talking about it, too. Like, yeah, sometimes you just got to grind a little bit. You know, this is not illegal.
No,
you know,
man.
Sometimes you just got to hold someone down and just be a little aggressive, you know.
Yep. So, aggressive application of the basics. So
that's awesome.
So, anyways, all right. So, Steve Maxwell seminar. So, I sent Rob a text and somehow talked him into driving 9 hours across the desert to Scottsdale for us to go to a Steve Maxwell seminar. It was a 2-part seminar. The first part was on mobility. The second part was on strength. And for those that don't know, Steve Maxwell, you should, if you're into BJJ, and especially if you're into the fitness side of things, like kettlebells and stuff like that. I mean, he's one of the original jiu-jitsu, you know, black belts in the country. He had the original kettlebell training gym and the first jiu-jitsu gym on the Eastern Seaboard, and just, you know, really deep into the jiu-jitsu and just really fitness culture. You know, that's what I took from him. You know, he's just got some really deep roots and understanding and those things. And so I was pretty pumped to go meet him. I mean, you said, you know, you were pretty excited. Again, I talked to you into driving 9 hours across the desert. So, yeah, what's your take on old Steve?
There wasn't a whole lot of talking into it. Like, you sent me that text. And, man, I've been a fan of Steve Maxwell stuff for a long time, man. Like, I think I had one of his very first instructional kettlebell DVDs. I still got it at home. I'm sure collecting dust somewhere. And, yeah, just going to meet him and train with him, somebody that's been in it for so long, like, dude, you can't miss that opportunity. And, dude, it was nothing. Like, how much did he charge? It was $125 or something? Or
it was like $130.
For both seminars?
For both seminars, or something. Yeah. $75 for one.
Ridiculously
for
cheap.
Yeah.
You know, and that was 6 hours worth of instruction from a guy that level, dude. Like, man, like, it was a good opportunity. I'm glad you sent me that text. When you first sent it to me, dude, you said, hey, let's go check out the seminar, and you sent the link, and instantly, you know, I'm like, dude, man, this seminar is going to be like $800, $1,000 or something, you know, just obscene. I was like, so I didn't even look at it for a couple of days. I was just like, oh, fuck this. Like, it's,
yeah.
And then I was like, I got bored, and I was like, I clicked on it.
I needed
and
someone
I seen
to drive
the price.
With me, so I kept bugging.
Well, I seen the price, and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, being that I had this preconceived idea that it was going to be super expensive, and then when I clicked on it, it was, you know, $130 or whatever the hell it was, like, I was like, dude, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that guy's just a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he's, what, 65 years old now? 63 or something? He's mid-60s.
Yeah, he says he's going to be 65 soon.
Yeah,
so
early to mid-60s. And, dude, gets around super good. And for being a combat athlete for how many years? I mean, he wrestled in college. And I think he said he started wrestling when he was like seventh grade or something, you know?
Yeah, so in high school or something.
His whole life he's been, you know, doing aggressive sports, and he still gets around great.
Yeah.
You know, like, and we're not getting any younger.
No.
So we got to take that shit into consideration. You know, it's.
That was like, it was basically like, was kind of the theme for it. It was like, it was, because he has like a jiu-jitsu for a lifetime. There's a camp. Yeah. And then he does like some workshops and stuff. And so this was basically kind of like, almost like a jiu-jitsu for life light workshop where he was going over, you know, some of the concepts and stuff. But his whole thing, like you're saying, is coming from that viewpoint, which really, man, it's so hard for people to understand until you're on the other side, man, because you just sound like an old man when you're saying, like, oh, you whippersnappers, one day your knees will be talking to you, you know? Like, people don't, they're like, oh, whatever. And then you're on the other side looking back going, like, man, I wish I would have listened. But, you know, that was his whole thing. It's like, look, like, I've done this for so long. I've trained. So he's, you know, accomplished a lot of stuff at a high level. He's trained athletes that have accomplished stuff at a high, like, he literally trained Hoist Gracie for the original UFC. Like, he was, you know, part of the Gracie's plan to actually put up some cash to help, you know, produce the thing. So, I mean, he's seen what it takes at the highest levels. And he's also had the longevity at it to see what happens, because he talked about that a lot, like talking to people who were admitting mistakes and saying, like, man, if I had to do it over again, you know, I wouldn't have let him stack me as much, or I would have done more to work on this type of mobility or respected this more. So that's the thing, is seeing, like, on the other side of it, like, oh, you know, these are the things you got to keep an eye out for. And so that was his whole thing, was like, here's how you approach staying strong and mobile for jiu-jitsu while keeping an eye on the end game, like the long run, which is like, you know, one day you will be 65 and you will want to still play this game. At least I will, you know. So yeah, no, that's so you know, we I guess, starting with you, man, what was your biggest takeaway from, you know, what the stuff that he covered? He went over a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he went over a ton of stuff. To say it'd be really hard for me to, like, really say, hell, this is my favorite thing, or this is my best. But there was so much good stuff that we learned. Yeah, I can't really just pick one. You know what I mean? Like, you could go down as far down as picking one exercise. But, like, I've taken to heart the mobility stuff.
I was going to say, I know your number one thing, dude. Yeah, you came back like a convert, man.
Dude, man, like
a born-again Christian with the mobility stuff, man.
Well, man, like, I took it to heart. Like, you know, he said, like, hey, try to sit in a squat for 20 minutes every day. You know, and little things like that. But that mobility stuff, like, I've been doing it every morning. Like, some days that's the only thing I do, you know. Some days, like, you know, it's kind of like a recovery day. But, dude, I'll set a timer for, like, 30 minutes, you know, just because I got to get to work or whatever, or something ridiculous. And mobility stuff, man. That's what I'll do, man. I'll just go through a little flow. I'm kind of figuring out how to piece it together. Dude, I feel so much better, man.
Yeah.
And it's mobility, but, like, you're moving, you're active, and it's kind of, you know, it's like a little workout. You know, it depends on how fast you go through it, how intense, like, by the time I get done, even when I'm really not, my focus isn't to, like, get a workout per se, but I get done, man, I broke a good sweat, and I feel good, and I've just been sticking to that every day, and it's great how good I feel, you know, like, it's really surprising, you know?
Yeah, we talked about that, like, I felt like that was, in talking with you after the seminar, I felt like that was, you know, like a light bulb moment for you, was realizing, like, oh, easy days aren't easy. Like, this mobility stuff isn't easy, you know? And I've been talking with some people since then, like, realizing, like, you know, we talk about hard, moderate, and light days and balancing those. And everybody hears, like, you know, moderate and light and thinks, like, you know, days off, not worth it. Like, hard is the only way to go. And really what it is it's different kinds of hard.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, an easy day is not an easy day. It's just a different kind of hard. And it's understanding, like, you need these different kinds of hards. Like, a good mobility session, it's not easy. Like, there's a lot of neurological reasons for why you get taxed, right? Like, when you do familiar movements, you're more efficient. So you're not having to expend as much energy. And so when you're in unfamiliar positions, when you're trying to move in these unfamiliar positions, you're so inefficient, and your brain is having to work so hard, and your muscles aren't working efficiently, so you're expending, like, so much more energy doing these weird movements. So that's why you get a little out of breath and you feel a little work just from doing these mobility movements, because your brain is working overtime trying to figure out these patterns and stuff. And so it's there's a lot of different layers to it that once you kind of understand, like, you know, and no, it's fine. It's just the screen went off.
You happen to say oh at the same time. I'm like, oh shit, man.
No, things are going sideways on us already.
Yeah,
we're the good. Computer screen went to went off, so we're still live though. So anyways, yeah, I thought that was, you know, a good, you know, just kind of a good overall message to have for everybody. But I felt like, yeah, that was, because if you're like, I don't know what my number one takeaway, I was like, well, I know what your number one takeaway was, man. We talked, you know, you kept talking about it. So
when you mentioned kind of in that, what you were just saying, like, we could go down that rabbit hole and, you know, pick that apart for days. But like intention, that's something I've thought about while I'm going through with these mobility exercises, because you can just go through and like do the moves, so to speak, quote unquote, just kind of do the moves. But like, you figure out, and this is probably going to kind of sound hippie-ish or something, but like the intention behind each move, you know, and you're doing it with a purpose, you know what I mean? Like, and it takes time to kind of pick that apart, you know. So you spend time doing it, and there's days where you just kind of go through the motion, but then you go to do it again the next day and you feel that, oh, I kind of used that muscle a little bit yesterday, you know what I mean? So, but the intention behind it, I'm finding that's big. You know, it's being thoughtful. It may not look any different. Like, right. I could go out there and do, like, those hip switches or something, and then I just slow down, and I'm more mindful about it. From the outside, it doesn't look any different.
Yeah.
But the feel and the result is going to be immensely different, and that's what I'm really starting to find is, the thought process and the intention behind it's, you know, huge.
Yeah, it is, man.
It really is.
Yeah, that was a word when I went to the Onnit Steel Mace certification. Freaking Isik Eric, the guy who is their steel mace guy, he kept talking about that. Like, intentionality is very important. You know, like, you know, when you're trying to do a squat, this is your intention. Now, you may not look like I look, you know, and he's got a really good looking squat, and he's like, but you're like, that's your intention. And you understanding what your intention is and driving that intention into your movements, like, that's what will eventually, you know, force your body to start adapting and moving in that direction. And a lot of times people, I think, like, just, you know, they'll try a movement, right? So they'll do a squat and they can't get down and they got a bad squat. And so they just kind of accept it and give into it. And so they just, you know, they don't keep that intention, just knowing, like, man, this is just where I'm at today. So that's a tough one, man, like you said, because it's real easy to get in there and just do stuff, but not necessarily have that intention behind your movement. And so it's, but man, that applies a lot to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, it's huge. For sure. Huge to jiu-jitsu. But, you know, it's funny thinking about the intention. It's really beneficial when you get in it, really, into anything, but the mobility. But you see it exposed when you start getting into the strength side of it, you know, because you, like, say for that, you know, the ramping isometrics, where you're putting 50% effort, 75% effort, 100% effort. A lot of people aren't really sure what that 100% effort is.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't really experienced it, you know, so you got to be, you know, thoughtful or, you know, mindful of that.
On the other hand, they don't know what 50% is.
They don't. They don't have that adjustment knob, the volume knob.
They're like 50, 7,500. Like, what are you talking about?
And so, like, that, like, doing the strength stuff that he taught us, man, there's so many, like, little lessons you get. I mean, obviously, you just get stronger, and we'll talk about all that stuff. But, like, the thought process it takes to make that effective really carries over, I mean, to the other stuff. You know? That's right. And I saw it when we were teaching our little seminar there last weekend. I saw that when we had people doing the ramping isometrics, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell, you know, they didn't really have that volume control. They really didn't know, like, what is max effort.
Or the intention, like, understanding the intention, like, letting themselves, like, get into weird positions and do weird things, because it's like, look, no, the intention behind this exercise is to recruit your glutes, right? Recruit, you know, feel it in your hips. So if you're not feeling it in your hips, then you're not doing it right. Like, it's not just a matter of just, like, doing it right. Or like you're saying too, like, not really understanding that volume knob and either, like, going too hard in the beginning, you know, and then not really being able to tap into 100% at the end, and so, you know, yeah, like, you know, understanding how to kind of apply those things in your training. And that's, like, that's really important. Like, one of the things, like, with my mountain bike training, you know, again, like, there's a lot of crossover in sport training from, you know, the mindset, kind of the principles that apply from one sport to the next. And so this is one thing I observed a lot with mountain bike training with athletes there, is that if people struggled with the basic movements, if I pulled them off the bike and I asked them to do a basic movement and they struggle with that basic movement, then I knew that their sport-specific skill, their ability to kind of learn a sport-specific skill was going to struggle. And that's one of the reasons that, like, doing this stuff, doing this training, you know, besides learning how to, you're learning how to move, you know, you're learning how to apply proper intention behind movement, you're learning how to control the volume knob of your movement. And these are all things that can really be sometimes hard to learn on the mats. You know, there's a lot going on. There's ego involved. I mean, we've got, you know, an episode plan where we're going to talk about, you know.
Oh, I'm sure we'll have many episodes that'll dive into the ego.
Yeah,
thing,
so you know, when you're in the, when you're training, especially, you know, if you're, you know, in your home gym, you know, not in like a, you know, a look at me, you know, public gym where you're, you know, you're just like, you know, when you're in your, in your cold, dark garage, freaking doing stuff by yourself, and it's just you, and you've taken all that stuff, the ego and all that stuff out of it, it just allows you a chance to just work on these things, and then now you can better apply those things to the mat, when you get to the mat and you start rolling and stuff. And so that's one of the things I think people don't really understand, like, you know, that almost kind of makes this kind of training a must. Besides some of the other benefits, you know, we'll talk about, like, you know, the, you know, with Steve's stance on squatting and being able to squat and why that's important. But it's a lot of stuff you get from this type of training, doing the stuff off the mat that applies to the mat. So anyways, it's kind of the point there. But anyways, anything else you want to add on that?
Oh, fuck, we could keep talking about that. You know, like the body awareness, you know, and you start, it is maybe a little bit easier to learn when you're doing, you know, this mobility stuff or the strength stuff, because you don't have somebody else trying to strangle you.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
You know, and we've all seen when someone new comes into jiu-jitsu, like, you know, sometimes we get some athletes come in and their body awareness is pretty good, you know, and they kind of understand where their limbs are and what's going on. But you get a lot of, most people that come in, their body awareness is just, I mean, without being an asshole, it's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, where's your left arm right now? And they're like looking around, like, where? Oh, there it is. And
you know, like, dude, 9 times out of 10, you'll say, hey, put your right arm here.
Yeah.
And they use their left arm or something. You know, like, no, your other right. Yeah. Like, they just, and it's hard, like you say, it's hard to learn that body awareness when you're trying not to get strangled because of, you know, all kinds of things. You know, obviously the ego, you don't want to get beat up by some, you don't want to get beat up by a girl or some little tiny guy or whatever the case might be, or, it's just, it's tough, you know, so, yeah, I hadn't, in your 20s, I hadn't really thought about it like that, you know, like the teaching you the you know, how to control yourself and where you're at and the intention and the feel, what muscles are working, and it's easier in that environment, and then learning it there and carrying it over to when you're, you know, training with somebody, like,
yeah.
I hadn't really, it's funny, I hadn't really thought about that a lot, but it makes sense.
Stripping it down,
yeah, you really strip it down.
Yeah.
It'd be good for people.
Take the sport-specific skill out of it, so. Which is something that Steve mentioned. He said several times, and obviously I'm gonna say there's obviously exceptions to every rule, you know, there with this stuff or statement. But, you know, he said several times that if you can't squat, you probably shouldn't be doing BJJ. And obviously, if you got some sort of like real medical thing or structural thing that literally keeps you from squatting, then that's one thing. But for most people, man, they can squat, and they can squat a lot better than they think, and they can squat better than they think despite some medical professional telling them, no, this is it. This is, you know, an excuse for you to not be able to squat. And you know, we saw that firsthand over the course of the first 3 hours we went over the mobility, where you had people who went from really bad squats to, like, you know, Steve saying, like, all right, man, that's pretty good. Like, obviously you need to keep working on that. That's not perfect, but that's passable. Like, now you can do jiu-jitsu and not set yourself up for an injury and stuff like that. So, and, you know, he mentioned part of that. Like, if someone can't do a basic human movement skill, you shouldn't be asking them to do, you know, sport-specific skill, especially like a combat sport.
Yeah, combat situation.
Like jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and there's a lot of different reasons for that. I mean, one, just, you know, leverage and application of force. Like, your body's designed to apply leverage and apply force in a a certain way most efficiently. And when you can't move properly, like when you can't squat, and you get down into the deep, deeper into your squat, and all of a sudden your hips can't move anymore, and you start round at the lower back, and you start compensating for that. Well, when you roll, you're doing that same thing. And that means that you're not able to actually like apply force as efficiently. You're not able to use the leverage of your limbs as efficiently when you're not able to move properly. So like that, from a performance standpoint, especially in a sport that values leverage and applying force through leverage and stuff like that, it's one of the huge reasons why your squat is so important for jiu-jitsu, because we spend so much time in that position, which basically equates to the bottom of your squat. Like when you're on the bottom, closed guard, a lot of a lot of stuff, man, where you're like balled up a little bit, trying to get balled up underneath people, you're in that basic like deep squat position. And so if you can't squat off the mat, basically outside of that, then you're going to be doing those same compensations when you're rolling, and it's going to make it harder for you to apply force properly and do your techniques properly. So, anyways, I don't know what's your take on that.
That's perfect. And yeah, just being able to move and be comfortable moving in those positions, like the squat or whatever. Yeah, it's definitely like, if you can't do that right, like you're not going to perform at your best. It's simple as that. But I think I would have to say almost even more important is keeping you healthy.
Yeah,
obviously, performing is super important. You wouldn't be doing this.
I try to sell people what they want and then give them what they need. Yeah, so everybody wants to know, how's this going to help me tomorrow?
Yeah, am I going to win gold medals by doing this?
Right, how's this going to help me, whatever. And like that you will see like direct results in immediate, as your squat improves. But I agree with you. The real goal from that is what you're talking about.
It's healthy.
Longevity.
That is the real goal. And, yeah, you're right. Everybody wants that immediate feedback. They don't want this long-term shit.
Until you hit 40, man. Yeah, it's funny, man. 40, like, all of a sudden you're like, shit.
But even,
you think about it.
No, you and I are both the same way. We like immediate feedback. And, if we're going to invest time doing something, we want to say, oh, is this making me better here? So it's hard to play the long game sometimes, but... Man, you have to. You really have to. At the end of the day, you don't want to wake up in the morning just like, feeling like an old man, shit's hurting. It shouldn't be to where when you get out of bed in the morning, it takes a minute to kind of get things moving and warmed up. Like, that's not how it should be.
It's not normal.
That's not normal, man. That's not exciting. But that is a lot of people's normals.
It is.
And that's too bad. And I think we can kind of tie that into a lot of people's normals. They think they feel okay, because maybe they're not hurting, so it's all perception, someone can't squat, you see their squat and it is just, terrible. And like knees caving in, like it just, you see it and you're just like, oh my God, dude, something's going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they feel okay. Their day-to-day life, they're walking around, they're going to work, they're walking, whatever they're doing, they feel pretty good, but they don't know how much better they could feel.
Yeah.
And I think,
or they don't know until they get pushed out of their comfort. Like, that's the thing, is like we get like this movement vocabulary that we build around our dysfunctions and our pain, and we rely on that movement vocabulary. So, but it's almost like, if somebody came up to you and said, hey man, like you're gonna have to start functioning with 50% of the words that you normally use, like that would put a damper on your ability to communicate properly with the world. And that's a lot of the way that movement is. Like movement is your ability to communicate properly with the world. And when you have these dysfunctions, like you're literally limiting your movement vocabulary. And it's not until you get pushed out of that comfort zone that like, oh, you really start to see like this is where you get injured. This is where you really start to notice your limitations and stuff like that. But people just kind of learn how to get by with that limited movement vocabulary. Even in a sport, they get by with that limited movement vocabulary, not realizing, but like you said, like, man, you can communicate so much more effectively with the world around you if you moved better and had a better movement vocabulary.
I liked saying how you said that, movement vocabulary, because that's kind of cool. I don't think I've ever heard that, but that makes That makes really good sense, because if you have a good vocabulary, it's easy for you to talk to people and, you know, communicate, you know, and express your ideas, you know, effectively, get them across to people. But when you got the vocabulary of a 5-year-old, it's hard to, you know what I mean? Like, it's hard.
I got a 5-year-old.
Different
level of communication.
Yeah, it's hard for you to express yourself, you know. And so saying movement vocabulary, that's perfect, because you see somebody, a lot of people, their movement vocabulary, they're at like a 5 or 6-year-old level, man. They're like,
They don't realize it.
They don't understand that, you know, they know a few
words. But they're
not
even, their movement vocabulary isn't even as good as a 5 or 6-year-old's, but it's like, their movement vocabulary is like a 5 or 6-year-old's, like, language vocabulary.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So, I know what you mean. Yeah, I just kind of wanted to, like, clarify. But that's the deal. It's like, they need to move more.
Yeah.
Like a 5 or 6-year-old.
Right.
Really. Right. But yeah, no, that's it, man. Yeah. It's like trying to communicate with the world with a 5 or 6-year-old's vocabulary.
You need to break out the thesaurus or Webster's app and, you know, get the word of the day and start making yourself, expand your vocabulary, so to speak, a little bit. And that's what that mobility stuff is going to do. And it's just, man, it's just going to, again, people don't know that they could feel better, I think, you know, and
pick up skills better. I mean, man, a lot of your ability to pick up your, like, skills in jiu-jitsu, especially early on, man, is it's built on that movement vocabulary that you come into jiu-jitsu with. And if you're limited already, then you should be working on it to make sure that you're, you know, keeping it up. But yeah, man, like, that's why, I mean, I'm not a very, I wasn't like this natural athlete, you know what I mean? It wasn't, I've had to work for. And so, like, that's how I know, like, this mindful application of what I learned from strength training. Because I started out, like, a lot of guys, like, you know, bodybuilding in high school, because I wanted girls to look at me and stuff like that. Of course, right?
So girls for the girls,
exactly,
man. That's right.
Man. A lot of us started out that way. But you eventually, somewhere along the way, I learned, like, oh, wow, I can get a lot more from strength training. And, you know, it taught me a lot of lessons about life and about myself. And, I got a lot out of strength training before I got into mountain biking. And I found, like, oh, I'm able to apply a lot of these lessons to mountain biking. And as I get into jiu-jitsu, I'm like, oh, man, I'm able to apply a lot of these lessons to, you know, to jiu-jitsu as well. So anyways, man, yeah, kind of lost my train of thought there.
That's okay. We're beating a dead horse eventually.
Yeah,
we could go on again, you know, but because that statement saying if you can't squat, you shouldn't be doing jiu-jitsu. Obviously, we see a ton of people that can't squat for shit that are great at jiu-jitsu. You know, we see it all the time. And so, of course, I mean, but are you doing your jiu-jitsu or are you living your life in the best version possible?
Yeah.
You know, and it's uncomfortable for people to hear that sometimes, because you have to sit down and sit with it and think about it. You know, like, am I really, you know, should I spend a little more time stretching? Like, it doesn't take much time, but it's discipline, you know.
It's not fun, dude.
Like, it's...
That's another thing Steve talked about,
It's not always
it's not motivation.
Fun. No, man. Like, you're...
It's like people think about motivation. I mentioned this in a blog post I wrote about this, that, like, you know, motivation is like what Rocky Balboa used to wake up every morning and drink raw eggs and chase a chicken when he was, like, facing Apollo Creed. Like, there was a burning fire inside of that dude. He had a freaking date on the calendar, and he was motivated. And people, like, I think look for that for a lot of things in life, but especially, like, this stuff, especially their strength training and their mobility. Like, man, I just don't feel like doing it. And it's like, but do you feel like, you know, do you wake up motivated to brush your teeth, right? Like, you don't wake up with a burning desire that just drives you to the sink to brush your teeth, you know, a couple times a day. Some people do, and they usually got to go talk to some, you know, a psychiatrist about it. But, you know, no, it's a discipline that you build. And so is this stuff. And, you know, again, it's definitely it's not fun, but it pays off. But so, man, I want to actually talk about the strength stuff, man, because the mobility, it's all kind of tied in. And it was interesting. We did see, like, towards the end of the mobility, you know, when we were doing the freaking YTWL thing, you know, and we were...
I still, like, I try to do that every day. That's a strength thing for me.
Yeah,
like,
that was
shit
it.
Mobility.
Yes,
like,
yeah. Where's the line? It gets gray, man. Where exactly does mobility end and strength begin? And, you know, real quick, I'm gonna back up a little bit. Mobility, what is mobility? Because that was kind of a cool thing. You know, some people may be familiar with it, but, you know, you hear mobility and you hear flexibility, and they're not necessarily the same thing. In fact, they're not the same thing. And Steve did a good job of demonstrating this, where For flexibility, he had someone stand next to him and balance, put their hand on his shoulder so that they could balance and raise one leg up straight. And he would, lift it up as high as he could until it started to get tight. And then he then had the person actively lift their leg as high as they could. And there was a difference. Every time for everyone there was a difference. And some people, it was a very significant difference between how far you could passively push their muscle into a range of motion and how far they could actively control it. And so that first is flexibility. The second one is mobility, that ability to control it. And so, and I found it real interesting that Steve was saying that he found that his bendiest people would be the most injury prone, that it wasn't necessarily like being super flexible that you wanted. It was, you wanted that mobility and that ability to create tension and control your full range of motion. Obviously, on the other end is people who are so tight, they're easily pushed into positions where they can get injured and things start to pop. But what you're looking for is that middle ground where you can move freely, but you're able to create tension and control that entire range of motion. And so, mobility involves movement-based stuff with some stretching. Again, it's like these lines get real blurry. Mm-hmm. But, when you're trying to have a conversation and talk about it, and we keep saying mobility, we're generally talking about your ability to control and move throughout a range of motion or in a certain position and stuff like that. I mean, was that your yes, takeaway?
Yeah, it was exactly my takeaway. Yeah, he broke that down good, and I think you just explained it real good. Like, there's a difference.
Yeah.
So it's
– yeah.
Just, I mean, so there's no confusion, everybody understands it. Yeah, there's –
and stretching has its place. Like, flexibility is a component of mobility. Like, if you're super duper tight, like, you may need to start with some basic stretching. But at a certain point, I mean, this is why I like people that only do yoga. I mean, man, you can kind of just look at them, right? Like, the eye test just tells you they're weak. Like, they're not, there's something off. Like, they can move and bend and get in these positions, but their ability to really, like, control and create tension throughout,
apply force
through that range of motion, yeah, and stuff like, yeah, that is limited. And you can see that, and again, you can see it with the opposite, where you see, like, your typical meathead guy in the gym who can barely move his arms, walking around, and he's super tight. But yeah, neither one's good. It's something in the middle that we're looking for. But moderation in all things, even moderation. Right?
That's right. That's something I'm not good with. Moderation, moderation.
I know, it's funny, not easy, man. We were coming back from the seminar after Steve told us, like, no, you should only do strength training twice a week, every 3 to 4 days. And Rob's here, like, I had to talk him off the edge of freaking 5 days a week or something like that, man.
Hey, I'm gonna admit, man, I'm still struggling with that. I really am, because I still do some of those strength things every day. And I'll change it up. And we can get into that, because what Steve talked about, you should only have to do it a couple of days a week. That's if you're training a lot, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I still have a – moderation's
there's
not
a
like –
There's a volume and intensity. And it's balancing those things. And, yeah, I mean, Steve's objective was to give you the minimum effective dosage.
Right.
What's the least amount you can do to see the best results off of the least amount. And – no one's saying that if you do more, you won't see better results. You just kind of hit that point of diminishing return where the extra effort you're putting in isn't necessarily yielding the same percentage of results as it was before. But yeah, man, doing it more, because there's a skill to it, right? So this is what I want to kind of get into here. And we got class coming up here in a bit, so we're gonna have to go in about like 15 minutes or so.
We're gonna have to do a part two.
Yeah, man. We'll see. Yeah, well, it's gonna
continue.
This will be a regular thing for us. So, anyways, but strength, man. For me, that was my big aha moment, because the way that Steve explained that strength, there's three different factors to strength. When you're getting real technical about it, but when you really like boil it down at its base thing, it's like, how well can you create tension in a muscle? And the more tension that you can create, potentially the more tension that you can then, create applying it to a movement skill. And so for me, like him kind of explaining, like, strength is one thing. The movement skills that you can apply that strength to are another thing. So a deadlift, for example, that's a movement skill. Like, that's one of the three factors of strength that he was talking about was time under tension, intensity, and then your technique, right? And so your technique is that kind of wild card factor. Like you can improve your strength by improving your technique. And so you can get better at a deadlift and see your strength numbers go up, but are you really improving your strength, which is from the standpoint of your ability to maximally create tension in a muscle? Because on some level, technique training becomes, your body wants to become more efficient. It wants to be able to actually produce less tension and do things easier, right? And so there, at some level, that's why you're always having to add weight and find ways to, like, can, you know, and there's a diminishing return to that. So when he started talking about isometrics, and they're like using isometrics to build strength, because isometrics allow you to create maximal muscle tension in a muscle group and in a safe, effective manner, and then you can go and apply that tension creation skill. It's basically a skill. Like, as you're doing it, like, I'm sure we'll talk about here in a second, both you and I found out, like, whoa, as you do these ramping isometrics, you know, I'll explain here in a second, like, you find out, like, wow, there's a skill here to creating tension, especially tapping into 100%. So as you build that tension creation skill, now you're better able to apply it to whether it's your sports skill on the mat, whether it's, you know, a skill in the gym, if you still want to go in the gym and do your deadlifts and your stuff, which I do. Like, I think there's something to be said for doing some of that stuff. But anyways, for me, that was kind of my big aha moment, was just understanding the need to create, to work on that tension creation skill kind of almost separately from your movement skill stuff. So, yeah, man, I don't know. What's your thoughts?
Yeah. So, no, I think you explained it good. Yeah, there's a skill. Like, if deadlift's a perfect example. To get better at deadlift, you got to do a lot of deadlifts. And there's a ton of technique that goes into it. Just like if you're getting into Olympic lifts, you know, clean and jerks, you know, snatches. I mean, huge amount of technique. And if you are pushing the envelope, you know, you start adding weight and you're finding flaws in your technique, your risk for injury really starts going up. And, like, I think something that was very important that and you've said it several times, and I think it was important for you too, is make sure the goal is the goal. You know, why
the goal is to keep the goal the goal.
Yeah, the goal is to keep the goal the goal. And what that means, like, we're trying to get stronger and be healthier for our specific sport, for jiu-jitsu. We're not trying to deadlift 500 pounds.
The focus changes.
And so that was big for me, is because you can figure out with, like, the ramping isometrics, we'll have to explain that, but you can create so much tension in your muscle, and, like, the muscle doesn't know the difference between tension. That's all your muscle
tension
can do.
Tension, your muscle's dumb.
Yeah, your muscle's stupid. Your muscle can create tension or it can be relaxed. Like, that's it, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when you can figure out how to create maximum tension in that muscle, and the risk for injury is, like, nil. Like, you're zero. When you're doing those ramping isometrics.
Almost, yeah.
I mean, of course, you can always...
I always say shit like that, and then I'm like, please don't go prove me.
Oh, there is a way to hurt yourself.
I know. I've been training long enough to know, man. Someone will find a way.
Someone has hurt themselves doing it, yes. And someone will. But it's way...
Generally speaking,
it is way... You have way less of a chance of hurting yourself doing that than you do slapping another 45 on each side and trying to really up your deadlift.
So let's explain the ramping isometrics real quick. So the ramping isometrics are, and again, you actually touched on it earlier, and it's where you take a movement, right? And so, and you, for example, say you sit on the ground and you take your belt and you got your feet out in front of you and you put your belt around your feet and you're doing, like, a row, right? So you're grabbing the belt and you're pulling it into, like, so you're doing a row with your belt. And obviously, if you pull on your belt real hard, it's not going to go anywhere. At least it shouldn't, or you got the wrong belt. We're not doing karate here, guys. But anyways, so you're going to, you know, row as hard as you can. Like, so that's your isometric, is trying to do the row. You're pulling against an immovable object, which is your belt. And so the ramping isometric, you would start for 30 seconds at 50% effort. And then you would do 30 seconds at 75% effort. And then you would finish off with 30 seconds at 100% effort, trying to break the belt. And your goal is, when you're done, is to fail. Like, that's the other thing that he added into this, is you're doing one set to failure. And you want to take it to failure. And again, like, something that I've used before, but I always kind of felt was a little dangerous. But when you're using isometrics, you can go to failure. And because you're not moving, that danger's not there. And so it's cool because the first 50%, you can kind of get everything set. You can make sure I got the right muscles engaged. We're talking about that intentionality, right? Like, make sure you've got the right intention behind your movement. Ramp it up to 75. Make sure that you're keeping the right muscles engaged. You're keeping everything where you want. And then you're finally getting into that 100%. And that's what should keep you from getting hurt, because you kind of had a ramp up into that 100%. And if you're using the right intention and you continue to apply that intention into your 100%, then it's safe. But like, that's the ramping isometrics. And you can apply that to any of the movement patterns. You know, Steve talked about training. You know, I think at this point, a lot of people are familiar with movement pattern training. You're looking at push, pull, squat, hinge. You know, things get a little fuzzy after that. Different people have different categories. Steve talked about rotation and both creation and stuff like that, and resisting it. But anyway, so that's the idea. Like, that's the workout in a nutshell, is you pick one exercise for each of those muscle groups or movement patterns. And then you do that one set of that ramping isometrics and you're done. And it's hard. Like, when you count up and you're like, dude, I only did like 7 minutes of work. And it's hard. It's freaking, it is deceptively hard, man. So yeah, like that's it.
That explains it great. And there is skill that goes into that. And the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. And I think, you know, the better workout you'll get, you know, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, it comes with anything. You got to put the time in, you know, and you got to play with it. And that's kind of where I'm at with all this stuff. Cause it's, what, we went to that seminar 2 weeks ago, three weeks ago, something like that. And so I'm kind of in that experimenting stage right now. I'm playing with it. You know, the mobility stuff is every day. And I play within that realm, but I'm doing something with that every day. The strength, I'm trying not to be a meathead about it and just do it, you know, so that's hard for me to, like, but I'm finding that I'm getting better at it. So I'm able to create more tension, and I can feel, like, because, like, when you first do it, yeah, you let go, you get done with the move, and you're tired, but you recover pretty fast. And then, you know, later that day, you're like, man, I really don't feel like I worked out. But then the next day, you're like, oh, you feel the muscles.
It's a different kind of soreness, man. It's different,
but it pays those dividends. Yeah. Like, you will, like, because I did some, like, tempo pull-ups the other day. And, man, you're only on the pull-up bar for, you know, depending on how long you do it. I think I was on the pull-up bar for 50 seconds. I maybe hit a minute. You know, four up, four down with a 2 second pause at the top.
Beast, dude,
I was struggling. Yeah. And like, but I got done, you know, shook it out, like, I was good. And I thought to myself, well, let's do another pull exercise. Like, no, let's just stop. Man, today's Thursday. I think that was Monday or Tuesday. And I can still feel my lats today, you know, like, so, oh, okay. It's there. Minimum effective dose. Like, it's there.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Man. It's creating tension. Like, if you create 100% muscle tension, you take it to, you know, again, failure is with a movement-based exercise. Because that was the other thing Steve talked about. Like, you can do kind of movement-based exercises, you know, like tempo pull-ups, tempo push-ups, squats, things like that, where you're moving at a slow tempo, never taking the tension off the muscle, going for like 40 to 70 seconds. And or you can use the ramping isometrics where there's no movement. And, you know, really with the ramping isometrics, you can probably go like closer to true muscle failure, because really with a movement based exercise, you're looking more at technique failure, because that's, you know, you're obviously,
you can
a
start
lot of
cheating it.
Yeah.
You don't want to let your technique go and start putting stress
in the wrong area. So it's a movement based one will be more technique failure, but you can still put a ton of stress on the right muscle with the right focus and intention with it. But yeah, it was, you know, for me, what I'm doing is I'm doing 2 days a week of the ramping isometrics and calling that strength. And then I'm doing 1 day a week, because I still like to do, a few sets of deadlifts. I think there's a skill to picking something up off the ground. I like to do my Indian club works. I think there's a skill to a lot of the circular movements and the throwing type movements that they have. So there's movement skills that I want to work on through, you know, you could call it strength training, but what I'm doing is, like, this is skill training, right? Like, so I wouldn't come in and try to do max out on a rep in jiu-jitsu, right? Like, I'm just getting reps, man. I'm just drilling. I'm just getting reps. This isn't a competition. I'm not rolling, you know, I'm just drilling. So if I don't come in and drill at 100%, I'm drilling at like 50, 60%, you know? And that's kind of how I look at that other type of training. Like, well, okay, I'm going to do this, but I'm working on a movement skill. And so I'm, I'm never going to let myself get above that 80%. I'm really trying to, because it's just, I'm just training the skill. I'm not trying to get strong with it because I'm already covering strength with my ramping isometrics and my, you know, the constant tension movement stuff. And then this other stuff is for skill training because I enjoy the movement skill behind it, or I just like doing it, you know. But that's what kind of keeps me from blowing myself up, from doing too much, is, again, it's a different kind of hard. Like coming in here and drilling is a different kind of hard than like rolling, you know what I mean? So it's like it's a different kind of application of it, I think. So anyways, man, yeah, any closing thoughts? I hear some noise outside, yeah. So I think we're going to have to get going.
Gotta go teach class pretty soon. Well, it's real quick. I see that you talked a bunch about ramping isometrics, and then as soon as you like handed it off, I went right into talking about like tempo exercises, and we didn't talk about the time under tension tempo stuff. And so I just kind of, not that I ignored what you were saying, in my mind it connected, but for maybe the rest of the world.
No, we were both there, man. So we both saw it the same way.
It connected, but maybe we didn't quite explain it to the two people that will listen to us on this thing. So maybe we will.
We touched on it a little bit. We'll have to 40 to 70 seconds for constant movement.
We'll get into that. We got to go teach class, but. I guess before we wrap it up, this is my first podcast ever. You have popped my podcast cherry, James.
That's awesome, man.
So I will always remember my first time.
I know, man. My wife's been like bugging me forever. She's like, you and Rob need to get a podcast.
Dude, I listen, like my job affords me the opportunity. I listen to countless hours of podcasts, dude, and anything and everything. And I've never been on one. And so I've never talked on to one, so I'm interested to see how it comes out. You know, like what kind of weird tics do I have? Am I saying all the time? You know what I mean? Like
people will let you know. Like, don't worry.
My place. You know, you'll have your placeholder while you're holding thoughts. You know, am I going or I probably use fuck all the time. Why I'm thinking like, well, fuck this fucking thing and that fucking, you know, and that's just because I'm thinking and I can't. My mouth can't keep up, or my brain can't keep up with my mouth. One of the two. So I'm interested to see how it's gonna sound and
I've cheated, man. I've done. With my bike, James, MTB strength training stuff. I've done a bunch of podcasts, but man, yeah, I know what you mean in the beginning.
Dude, I'm
see
a
some
white
of my
belt.
Original videos.
Dude, I'm a I'm white belt with no stripes. I don't even know how to tie my belt.
No,
my D pants are on backwards.
Well, see, the thing is like for me, like this is just an extension of what we already talked a lot. Like to, you know, we talk about, and then we talk about to other people, trying to impart some wisdom. So, like, I think that's why like this is going to be good, because. Like we have these conversations already, and we're trying to have this. And like to me, I almost look at this as like a lazy way for us to go. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like down the road, we're gonna like new people are gonna come in. Like, dude,
go listen to this.
Go listen to episode 3 or whatever. You know what I mean? And get back to me because you know it's we're gonna, you know, we have these conversations. So it was fun. It was good, dude. I'm looking forward to doing these things. We're gonna have fun with it. Got some characters we'll be introducing. Got to get our coach Kevin on here. Oh, shout out to my boy Lance. In Maryland, he asked that we give him a shout out, Conquest BJJ, and and we're with Grand Valley BJJ in Grand Junction. If you guys are ever in Grand Junction, Fruita area, look us up, man. Love to have, you know, anybody come by and join us at the gym for some training.
For sure, yeah. Grand Junction, Colorado. A lot of people come through traveling. You know, it's a great place to come. All kinds of cool stuff to do here. So,
yeah.
And now you got a kick-ass jiu-jitsu gym to come train at. So,
heck yeah, for sure. So, all right, man. Well, we're going to sign off. So, until next time, we'll, you guys be safe and –